This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write a good book. And oh boy, oh boy, if anyone is watching on YouTube, I am like, I am wiping my arms, my hands, my You know, on the way to the studio, I thought, well, I better just put in a little bit extra petrol so I don't have to worry about it on the way home. So I stop and I put in $5, and that's, you know, I always do it. I'm one of those people, I always do it exactly. Like I do $5, $10. If it goes over, then I'll go to the next dollar. Anyways, I was going to put in $5, and I thought, well, that's, you know, that'll keep me going for a few days. I don't drive around much anymore, not like in the old days. And the pump, the thing wouldn't stop, and it kept putting petrol and petrol.
Hey, you're in America, Patsy. They don't understand what petrol is.
Oh, petrol. Gas. I was filling it up with gas. I still do that. I always, when I go to the grocery store, I always tell the guy, put it in the boot. He doesn't know what I'm saying. That's years in England. Has that ever happened to you? The pump, the thing wouldn't click. It wouldn't click off. The petrol kept coming and coming and coming, and I only want $5, and it wouldn't stop. And I'm doing everything, trying to click it off, and I'm, you know, there's, you know, sometimes there's lots of people around. Today there was only one guy at a further pump, and I'm yelling and I'm screaming, help me, help me. And I try everything. I thought, well, I'm strong, I can do this. And he came over and he couldn't do it. And then it kept going, and I was, you know, I was getting up. Well, nowadays, of course, it's easy to get up to $20 real fast. And it kept coming and it kept coming, and he's trying everything, I'm trying everything. And he sort of pulls it out, and that petrol spilled, you know, splashed all over me. My feet, my leg, my arms, they're like a little bit, I don't know, they feel funny now. And I smell something awful, and nobody better be smoking around me, because this is terrible. This is awful. I didn't know that the kind of thing could happen. Did you, Ed?
Well, it can happen, but I want you to go into the clerk next time and ask if they have petrol.
Yeah, I never thought of that. I didn't have even time to go in and complain to them, because the guy did. The guy, he had nice shoes. He had really nice shoes. Really, they looked like, you know, really nice, expensive running shoes. And that got all over him too. He was not happy. And I said, I can't do anything. I'm on the way to the studio. I have to get out of here. So, but I, as I was leaving, I saw him going inside. So maybe he'll get a new pair of shoes out of it or something, because it was, you know, you don't expect these things. I usually don't do things on the way to the studio just because of that. I'm always early, because you never know. Anyway, so a fun way to start my day. And another thing that happened today, I was hoping to have somebody from EHS to come in today to talk about they are the new sponsors, and it is Effective Solar Solutions. But unfortunately, we weren't able to get anybody in, but we will have somebody in soon to come in and talk about their system of solar panels and what they can do for you. And I will just add that, you know, I have a cousin in California, and I love talking to him. He's great. He's always got interesting stories. But in the past, I would have to go through 15 minutes before he'd get to some fun stories, because I'm trying to collect old family stories. He's my husband's cousin, but I think of him as my cousin. And collecting old family stories. But I would have to go through 15 minutes of him complaining about his water bill and his electric bill. water bill because I think I mentioned one time on the program, he got arrested because, you know, water's expensive. And he collected, he had two rain barrels underneath his, you know, next to his house. And he was collecting rainwater and, you know, using it for his garden. And he thought he was very clever. He was proud of himself. He got those two rain barrels, and they would fill up, and then he'd use them for his garden because he has a very nice garden. He's just north of Sausalito, and it's on a little hill, but he has a nice, you know, flowers and things that he tries to, you know, keep in looking pretty. And so he was so proud of himself, and he was, you know, doing it for a couple of years, and then one day they started sending him, you know, notices, cease and desist, and he didn't cease and desist. He thought, well, it's my water. It's coming down my roof. And he kept going. And then they started sending him fines. They fined him. The city fined him. Then when he still didn't do it, they actually came to arrest him because he was collecting water. And it turns out that the state of California has a law that you can't collect rainwater. It belongs to, I don't know, to everybody, which apparently it doesn't. Other people in other industries that we know are, you know, stealing all the water from the rivers, they don't get in trouble. But my poor cousin, you know, was almost hauled off to jail. Luckily, he knew the local police and they didn't haul him off, but they were ready to because they were ordered that. And of course, he had to dump his rain barrels. Not only did he have to dump them, that was silly because he had to dump them and they were full. Now, they wouldn't let him keep them and like use them, you know, use it up until, you know, how long it took him to water his flowers and his plants. They made him dump it and they made him get rid of the rain barrels so that they wouldn't even be near the house. So it was pretty silly. But that was nothing compared to what he used to complain to me about his electric bills because electricity is horrendous. I mean, we're here in Florida and we're lucky. I mean, it's bad because we are paying for three nuclear power stations that are never going to be built. So our bills are not low, but in California, they're very high. And then about 18 months ago, he got solar panels and he is so happy. He doesn't have a bill. I mean, he doesn't have an electric bill. It goes into whatever, however the solar panel thing works. And he's so happy. Finally, he's a happy guy. So we can get straight to the family stories because I'm trying to collect all the stories, which reminds me that, you know, it's a good thing for you to be doing. I want to just collect the family stories and put them all in a book at one point and just to preserve them. And if you aren't doing that, well, you should be. And one of the best ways to do it is to get a program called Scrivener. Scrivener is a word processing program, but a little more sophisticated than Word. And the nice thing about Scrivener is that it's already all sort of designed by chapters. So you can just pick a chapter, you know, the chapters are there, as many chapters as you want. And you can easily, very easily, just start writing, you know, the stories that you get. Say, this is Grandpa Johnson's stories. And you just put that in one chapter. And then you go on to Aunt Emily and you go on to everybody. And as a matter of fact, one of the nice things you can do is as you're collecting stories about each family member. So you might have, you know, you have 30 people in your family, you have 30 chapters, and then there are sub chapters. So you can have your opinion. You can write about what you remember about your Aunt Emily. And then what you can do is ask Aunt Emily to write a story about herself or to write about what she remembers about you. And then, so that's a subchapter. And you might have two or three subchapters for each relative. And it just starts growing. It's amazing. And many, many people are now doing this. And I really highly recommend it. All you have to do is just ask your relatives. Say, send me a story. You know, they email it to you. You copy the email straight into Scrivener. And after a few years, yeah, you can look at it and you'll say, my goodness, you know, I've got 30 chapters here about my family with stories. And the lovely thing about Scrivener, you can also include photos. So you might have 30 chapters with photos, with stories, stories about yourself, stories about your family. You know, it's just fun. And then also you can add like cutouts from newspapers. So, for example, if your Aunt Emily was born in 1935, you can have a news article there from 1935. And so it can go right there in your book. Now, you might publish it just for yourself, but it's something that your family will appreciate, they will love, and you can put it then, of course, you write it as well as you can, put it on Amazon, and it is there, and it is part of history. It becomes something that you can say. So from generation to generation, they will have that story of your family, and it can be a growing story. So you add, you know, you have 1 year you have maybe 30 stories, and then a few years later, everybody has another little story they want to add, and all you have to do is add another subchapter and republish it, and you have an expanding family history. It's a wonderful program. It costs $29. It's like so cheap, and it is it. You know, some people will say, "Well, I have to learn it." Well, you actually don't have to learn it if you know how to work in Word, and then you understand. You just work chapter by chapter. It's really easy. And also for all writers who are writing complicated books, particularly sci-fi. If you are reading sci-fi or military books, wherever you are doing, creating a new world, where you have a world building, you need to have Scrivener. I don't see how anyone can operate in Word anymore. It's just too it's too messy. You can't find things. But in Scrivener, you can find everything, and it is really, really fantastic. So all you have to do is type in Scrivener and get that program. It's easy to download, and start writing your family history, because these are stories worth saving, and it's just fun. It's just fun, and the wonderful thing is you can do it all yourself, of course, if you want. If you just want to write your opinion of your family, but if you want to involve your family and let them add to it, it can become a family event, and it can be something that, for example, Thanksgiving is coming up, and yes, I do think this year perhaps we can actually get together with people at Thanksgiving, and you can, right there, you just say, sit down here, you know, sit at my computer and write a chapter. And it can keep people busy while the turkey is cooking, or after they're all full and they just need a little time to relax. Say, here, sit and type a story directly into my Scrivener chapter about you. And it's fun. So that's something that I just wanted to recommend to everybody. I've been thinking about that for a long time, and I had forgotten to mention it. Anyway, so as I was saying, today's didn't start off exactly as I had planned, but I do want to mention again Effective Solar Solutions, and to thank them so much for being part of Joy on Paper. They are just fantastic, and they have a sort of a little motto here that they say, go solar, go savings, go EHS, and their ad will be at the end of the program. But I'm telling you, especially for all of you people here in Florida, I wish I could do it, but, you know, I'm in a condo, and they won't let me put anything on the roof. But if you have a rooftop, and since you can't collect water, I guess, you might as well collect the sunshine and cut those electric bills, because things are getting expensive. As a matter of fact, it's rather shocking when the petrol kept coming in and coming in. I now have, my tank is full. The cost, nearly, I looked at it, I said, oh my gosh. Oh, I don't know. Ed, what do you think about petrol costs? Gas costs, huh? It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And I don't think I've actually, because of the increasing costs, I have not actually filled my car. You know, I just put in $5 or $10 at a time. So it was rather shocking to see what it cost to fill the car today. So that was one of my adventures. Now I want to talk again about my website. I'm working on my website. I'm really updating it because there are lots of changes to WordPress, which is what is I used for my website. And so I've been doing sort of page by page. And I just did a new page for Devon Miller, who, of course, is doing our wonderful book buzzes about children's books and books that kids you should buy for kids, or you know, if you don't have a kid in your family, that you should buy and donate to a children's hospital. The page is just beautiful. I think I've done a marvelous job. It's amazing what I've learned to do in the past few years. But you can go and look at it. It's my webpage is radio-joy on paper, and I have a page right at the top. You'll see for Devon Miller. This young man is just, I am so proud that he is part of Joy on Paper. He was named the Sunshine Ambassador for the City of St. Pete, and it's just such a thrill to be able to help him at the beginning here of his career, because I think he's going to make it so big. He's so multi-talented, not just as a writer. And he's been writing since he was 7 years old, and he's published 5 Mr. Tickety Talk Clock books, which are just wonderful kids' books. And he's studying theater, and he's studying film. So he's just a wonderful kid. And I keep calling him a kid. He's a young man. He's a second year. And he's so wonderful. Anyway, check out that page. It's Devon Miller Book Buzzes. And I did another page, and that one is for Jim Lamb, because Jim Lamb has been doing these wonderful literary gems to help authors sort of hone in on the specific words and ideas that they need just to know about when they're writing, because so many people are learning to write on their own. And, you know, this is amazing. You can do this. You can. Once you start, you'll find that every time you write, the more you write, the better you get. And so I'm really proud that Jim Lamb has been doing these literary gems. And we have a new one that we're going to play right now. And we'll play that. And then I'm coming back. And I want to talk a little bit more about Jim Lamb.
It's a beautiful morning. The sun is out. Birds are chirping. Husbands hug wives. Moms kiss their kids. The perfect day. Then bam! Flight 11 hits the World Trade Center. The first domino has fallen. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Let's say you've written a story, but something is missing. What is it? It could be the inciting incident, that first domino. In Hamlet, a king is killed, starting a chain reaction that leaves Denmark in ruins. And a bunch of people dead. Romeo and Juliet even ends worse. Ah, that Shakespeare guy. What a writer. But it's not just the bard who knew how to ruin somebody's day. In Die Hard, John McClane wants to reconcile with his wife. If Hans Gruber picks another building, John and Holly might reunite without incident. End of story. How about Star Wars? If Darth Vader doesn't stop Leia's space cruiser, she delivers the Death Star plans without incident. End of story. More examples? Bruce Wayne's parents don't get shot. No Batman. Bruce the shark goes to Brazil. No Jaws. Lucy, Edmund, Susan, and Peter never visit Narnia. No lion, no witch, no wardrobe. But wait, there's more. What if Harry Potter never learns he's a wizard? The tornado doesn't take Dorothy to Oz. Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth never meet. No pride, no prejudice, no nothing. So writers, do yourself a favor. Ruin somebody's day. Start a chain reaction by knocking down that first domino and let the others fall where they may. Kerplunk, kerplunk, kerplunk. I'm Jim Lamb, and you just learned a little something-something about inciting incidents.
Okay, well, Jim, I really thank you so much for doing these. And just to tell you how much I love having you involved with Joy on Paper, I want to play the promo that we've done for your book, because it's a fascinating book, and here it is, and Big Ed taped it, so it sounds really great.
50 years ago, Jim Lam left Vietnam after serving in the Navy, where he fixed radios, played ping pong, and swept floors. Jim wrote about his time in the service in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, the story of how he survived Vietnam and kept his sense of humor. The book is available on Amazon. Just type in Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. You can also visit his website at www.jslstories.com.
Okay, well, that's a good idea. It's a wonderful book, and you can go also, again, I have a page for him on Radio-Joy on Paper, and it's Jim Lam and his Literary Gems. So go there and check those out, and there's a whole collection of them, and we're getting more and more every week. Again, thank you so much, Jim. Now, we're going to play commercials, and I'm going to come back in a little while. I have a wonderful, wonderful book. It's... No, I just am having so much fun with books about art heists. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest. Whoa, my first guest today, because I didn't have any guests this morning because I had other things to talk about. But I am so happy to welcome Carol Orange to the program. Carol has written a book called The Discerning A Discerning Eye, and it is an NIEA finalist for mystery genre in 2020 and an Amazon number one bestseller for heist mysteries, biographies, and memoirs. And I'm so happy to welcome Carol Orange. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Patsy.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Well, you're having a lot of excitement with this new book.
Yes, I am. I am. I'm very appreciative of that.
And this is your first book?
Yes, it is my first book.
Wow.
First published book.
There's always a few that don't get published, but the first published book, well, that's fantastic. And, of course, you picked, you know, if you're going to pick a subject to write your first book about, you picked a good one. Whoa. Wow, this is a major story. It was a major story. It's still a major story. And, of course, it is about the art heist of the unbelievable art that was stolen from the Gardner Museum. So do you want to explain, you know, I always hate giving away the entire story, but tell us how you came out with this idea and tell us a little bit about the premise.
Okay. So I came up with it because I was an art dealer in Boston when the heist happened in 1990. And I was just so angry that thieves stole 13 art objects, incredible objects, like the Vermeer painting, the concert. There are only 36 Vermeers in the world. It's priceless. And they stole 3 Rembrandts, a Gobert Flink, 5 Degas drawings, and a Manet portrait of a gentleman sitting at a cafe. I was so angry about this. So, I mean, how could they dare to take 13 incredible paintings from the Isabella Gardner Museum, which is a jewel of a museum? So, you know, I thought I was angry, and I said, you know, why aren't they finding the paintings? They're no one's finding them. The FBI is looking, the Boston police are looking, no one's finding the paintings. And that's 31 years ago. So I began to write this novel. My protagonist, Portia Malatesta, is a Boston art dealer, like me, but she's also a docent. And she studies the stolen art, looking for clues about the theft. So the FBI never really studied the art. I don't know why they didn't do that, but they didn't. They didn't look at, you know, why they stole
those particular
yes,
ones.
Exactly.
It certainly has intrigued me. Of course, let's step back a minute and just talk about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. This is one of the most incredible museums ever. It is so amazing. The first time I went there, I don't know, I was mesmerized, I was captivated. Tell us about this wonderful, wonderful woman, and she created a museum unlike any other.
That is so true. It is unlike any other. When, you know, the outside is just very ordinary looking, although it does resemble the outside of the Venetian Palazzo. When you walk inside and you see these pale pink walls and the orange nasturtiums coming down from the ceiling, and you see the Italian mosaics on the floor and all these gorgeous plants that come from her greenhouse, and the statuary, the Italian statuary. I mean, it is breathtaking. And Isabella Gardner was really an unusual woman. I mean, she knew how to collect art. She would travel a lot, and she would pick up various paintings here and there on her travels, and you know, they turned out to be masterpieces, but it's because originally she hired Bernard Berenson, who was an Italian Renaissance scholar, and he really taught her to have a discerning eye, which is why I named the book A Discerning Eye. And she could discern which paintings really not only were beautiful and, you know, resonated into her spirit, but also would be valuable and eventually the public would be able to enjoy them.
Well, I have been thinking a lot since I got the book. I've been thinking a lot about her. And the wonderful thing about her, this discerning eye, this ability to see what would last, what was great. And then when she decided to do the museum, to do it in a way where she made the museum so homey. You feel like you're in a home, and all of the art is arranged exactly as she wanted it, as she envisioned it. And what a wonderful, wonderful woman she was to do this collection. And smart, because, you know, she did this collection basically on a much lower budget than very, very famous people who spent tens of millions of dollars to collect art, and they just bought art. She actually selected it and did a fantastic job.
Yeah, oh, gosh, you are so right about that. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to the Hearst Castle.
Yes.
California. So it's a very grand property, and the grounds are magnificent, and the architecture is magnificent. But the art there is just meaningless. It's worth nothing. And William Hearst went to Europe, as Isabella Gardner did, but he never studied with Bernard Berenson. So he just thought whatever he liked. And the result is that, you know, the art is just nothing. I mean, yeah, they have a very fine silver collection, but...
But no, it's nothing. It comes down to nothing. Taste. Perfect, impeccable taste. She was absolutely amazing. She was, you know, I look back and I think, oh, what a joy it would have been to just be around her. She was filled with joy. And actually, she used that in some of the works some of the things that she wrote about. She would write about the pure joy. And I love that. I had read some of her letters and some of the things she wrote about her art. And she often used that word. And, you know, I named this program Joy on Paper. So it's joy on paper for books and, you know, here. But she saw that joy on paper of an artist. And she was herself a talented artist, you know, for sketching. And just having that, you know, to walk in there. And, of course, now you walk in and there are 13 pieces missing. So how did you hone in on the pieces, and what did you discover about, and what do you feel about the pieces that they took? Because it is an eclectic assortment of pictures. It's not, or not just pictures. What did you think of them? Like, we'll start, of course, with the most famous, the Vermeer. This painting, which is called The Concert.
Yes.
It's so sublime. It's hard to explain.
Yes. Well, Isabella bought this painting in Paris at the Hotel Drouot auction. And, you know, in this case, she was not advised by Berenson. And, in fact, Vermeer was not well known at that time. But the painting really spoke to her, and she bought it for $6,000. So in my novel, you know, Portia Malatesta has these imaginary conversations with the wonderful Isabella. And Portia is urging Isabella to please buy the concert. You won't regret it, she says. So the concert is an amazing painting because you have the mystery of the lute player. You see him from his back. You don't see him from the front. And there are, you know, two women, one at the harpsichord and one other woman who is, you know, has the metronome, and she's, you know, trying to get them all to play together at the right time in the right way. And so the mystery of who is this lute player, because we don't see him, brings you into the painting. It really makes you feel that you are a part of this painting. It's an intimate scene. So, Portia begins to analyze that painting. It was the painting that she spent many years looking at with her younger brother, who was a painter, and it was his favorite painting. So Vermeer was known later on for the tension between light coming in through an unseen window and falling on the floor of the concert, where the concert was held. You know, it was a room in Delft, Holland, and in fact, Vermeer never left Delft like so many other painters from Holland and Germany who went to Italy. So his paintings are so intimate, but also the beauty of the light falling on the gown of the woman, the harpsichordist, and on those wonderful black and white floors. And then you have sort of this tension of dark. There are paintings on the wall that are, you know, that are hard to discern. And Vermeer's father had been an art collector. So those were paintings that he inherited from his father, and he would often put them in the his own paintings.
Well, I notice in the painting, of course, there's this patch of orange, which I thought, is that what captured your eye? Because that's a yellow ochre, and it is.
That's great. Thank you for pointing that out. I love it.
Well, I thought, you know, her name's Orange, and she was captured particularly by this one, because it is right. You know, there aren't a lot of colors in this painting. The yellow sleeve, her yellow sleeve, which is so perfect, and then this patch of orange. I thought, well, that might have what captured Carol Orange.
I love it. I have to be honest. I never noticed that.
Well, that's a
I love it.
Well, you know, I love Vermeer. If I was going to steal a painting, I would steal a Vermeer. Of all the I would steal a Vermeer. I love Vermeer. And now in the book you have that she has Portia has in her kitchen, she has this black and white patchwork floor. Do you have that in your home?
I did. When I lived in Boston, I had a townhouse, and the kitchen was black and white tiles. You know, I thought of them as the Vermeer tiles, because I love black and white floors. So yes.
Well, I'm thinking of redoing my kitchen, and everybody is doing wood. They're doing sort of that wood look. But after I was looking back at this, I thought, you know, I think maybe I am going to go for the black and white Vermeer floor. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
So I will think about Vermeer, and I will think about you when I get my new kitchen floor.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was definitely, I chose that because of Vermeer. I mean, he really, really was a special artist.
And it's so funny when you look at it, his so much of it is so tiny, so little.
Yes.
Of course, you paint yourself, right?
No, actually, I do not. I've always been an art historian.
Okay, well, I've done some painting, and
oh.
I mean, I've all, I I have analyzed the Vermeers, and there's a part of me that wants to try, but I couldn't do it. I know I couldn't do it, but it's magical what he does. And in a small space, I mean, he doesn't need a big canvas. He just so small.
Right.
But of course, that was one of the paintings that was stolen. But the others, it's really a strange assortment when you look at it. The Rembrandts, I know that that every Rembrandt is valuable and every Rembrandt has its value. But, you know, and these ones, of course, were done when Rembrandt was fairly young. These were all done when he's in his early 20s. And so they're,
correct,
you know, quite different. Did you ever figure out why these particular Rembrandts were taken?
Well, Portia has this.
She has an idea here?
She has this hypothesis that in fact, you know, they stole the Rembrandts. I mean, one of the Rembrandts is Christ on the Sea of Galilee, and it's the only known seascape that Rembrandt did, although I think the real meaning there is about how agitated all the people on the boat are, whereas Christ is beatific, and, you know, Christ is trying to calm the people in the boat, the other people in the boat. You know, he believes they will make it through this horrible, angry sea. And they do, of course, in the real story. So that is an unusual Rembrandt. The Rembrandt that is of the husband and wife, you know, who look like the solid burghers, the Dutch burghers of the 17th century, you know, who are very prosperous, et cetera. But there is light and dark in all of that. And then they stole this tiny, tiny drawing, self-portrait that Rembrandt did of himself. And he looks very scruffy in it. You know, his one side is very dark, and, you know, he looks like he needed a shave. And, you know, they left a self-portrait of Rembrandt, which was much bigger, much larger, and it was painting on wood that was a self-portrait where he looked, and he's in all his finery. And so, you know, they found that painting was actually on the floor. So they had thought about stealing that, obviously. But instead, they took the scruffy, the scruffy.
And it was it's a few inches. I mean, it's only a few inches. I mean,
very tiny.
Very tiny. You could keep it in your pocket. You know, it's crazy when you think about it. The one that always mystified, well, there are two that mystified me. The landscape with obelisk. This is this is strange to take. I mean.
Well, that was done by Govert Klink, and he was a student of Rembrandt. And originally, it was believed to be a Rembrandt, but later, you know, they discovered that, in fact, it was painted by Govert Klink.
Yeah, I don't think anybody ever really thought it was Rembrandt. It doesn't look like Rembrandt. But again, didn't look right like Rembrandt to me. Again, it's on wood. It's small.
Yes.
You know, a small thing.
It was on the opposite side of the concert, which was situated on a desk. And on the opposite side of it was the Govert Klink. But it seemed to me that they took that because it was there. It was on the opposite side. But according to Portia's hypothesis about the tension between shadow and light, the obelisk painting is very, there's tremendous chiaroscuro, you know, tremendous tension between dark and light. So,
all I can tell you is that the people who did this heist, and
yes,
they're very strange people, if you ask me. They're very strange. And, of course, there's still a $10 million reward offered for the return of these. And in the museum, there's just blank space there. They didn't, you know, fill it in.
Right.
Because that's where they belong, and that's where we hope somebody will come forward and return them, because somebody has them. And what they are doing with them, which is very strange, it's like taking they take paper things, they take oil things, they take things on wood. Why do you think the Degas?
Oh, well, the Degas drawing, we're in the short gallery, and, you know, it is strange that they took the Degas, because there was a Michelangelo drawing.
Yeah. Why would you do that? People have to read your book. I guess they have to read your book to find out why they do it. And it's by Carol Orange, who is yellow ochre, I guess. And she has a discerning eye, and the name of the book is A Discerning Eye. And it's a great read. It's fun. First of all, you learn a lot about the art and about the art world in general. And you've blended it all with a nice thriller mystery story, and that's why you've been nominated in the thriller category. But other than the Vermeer, which I think everyone would take that first, but other than the Vermeer, what one thing would you have taken?
The Manet portrait of the gentleman sitting at a cafe. It's just wonderful. You really can read his character from his face and his position, the way he's sitting at the table with a half of a glass of white wine, and he's all dressed up in tails.
Well, the one thing I would take, is the bronze eagle, finial. I would take that.
Okay.
I would want that, and I would be because I know that if I took it, I would hold it in my hand. I would rub it. I would rub my fingers along it. I would love it so much, because of course it comes from Napoleon's first regiment, from the Imperial Guard. It's a filial four that was a top, you know, something. And I love that. And so from my point of view, if I was the thief, I would have actually taken that one.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, you probably know that most art thieves grab what's closest to the door. This was in a new...
Oh, this was not a grab and run everybody's doing. You know, no, this was... Somebody had a purpose. Somebody had a reason. I believe they were selected, and we can read about it, what you came out with in your book, because definitely, if I was going to, I mean, there are things in that museum. People, if you have not been there, if you get a chance to go to Boston, go to this museum. I can't even begin to say how wonderful it is. So unusual. It's here in America. And you wonder now, we are so lucky that there were people like her and all of the other collectors, real great collectors, who collected art. And all of the rich people today, what are they doing with their money? I mean, I'm telling you, a lot of the rich people today are spending their money on figuring out how they can clone themselves. This is true. I know. I've been talking to a lot of authors, and that's where they want to put their money, in cloning themselves instead of collecting and, you know, encouraging great art. So I think that this book might help people understand art a little bit. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes. It's www.carolorange.com.
Carol Orange. Now, is Orange your real name, or do you made that up?
It is my real name.
It's your absolute.
Name.
It's
I
your.
I was born with it.
Oh, wow. So you were destined to be yellow ochre, I guess, one day, and in a Vermeer painting. So, Carol Orange, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. The book is fascinating, and it's available wherever books are sold and hopefully also in bookstores that are opening up again. And it's called A Discerning Eye by Carol Orange. Thank you again for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much. I really love talking with you. Thank you.
Okay. It's been fun. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. And I want to add to everybody in our area here, if you have not been to the Ringling Museum, why not? The Ringling Museum, it's not as great simply because, you know, there's a limit. But Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum is exquisite. If you haven't been there, I would have moved in. She actually moved into the fourth floor, which I understand. But it's laid out exactly as she wanted it. It's very comfortable thing. One of the problems, of course, is they didn't have good security, and the security was bad. And partly it was because she was gone, and the whole museum was starting to not be appreciated by the public. And it took actually this stupid heist for the public to realize they could have lost everything. This valuable treasure. And so now people are protecting this museum and people are, you know, guarding this museum. But we have here, right here, in our area, a fantastic museum, the Ringling Museum. They had, of course, the circus, and Mrs. Ringling took the money and she went to Europe and she bought art and really some really great art there. And the museum itself, a beautiful design, comfortable. It's so comfortable. We spent a lot of our homeschooling right there in the museum, in the gardens and at the house, the Ringling House, and also in the museum. I just took my kids and we just went there. We spent the whole day. We would not only just, of course, we would spend some time in the museum studying history, because when we're talking about particular areas of history, there was a nice piece of art, so you could really get into it. Oh boy, oh boy. Okay, everybody, my goodness, the time went so fast. I want to again remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. My goodness, her new book is doing so well. Be My Ghost. You have to get that book. It's fantastic. It got a starred review from Publishers Weekly, and that is a big deal. So make sure you get that book, Be My Ghost by Carol J. Perry, and wow, you will have fun. And you need to have fun because you need to just chill out a little bit, people. And I have to go and, oh gosh, I smell of this petrol. It's unbelievable. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Thank you for everything. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him because I should have been a general. I'd have been such a great general. Oh gosh, I want to be a general. I want a general's pension, for goodness sake. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.